This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you and good afternoon. Agriculture groups expressed disappointment with President Obama's veto of legislation to repeal the EPA's Waters of the U.S. rule. While a vote was expected Thursday morning to override the veto, the Senate was thought not to have enough votes to reach the supermajority needed, likely meaning the fate of the rule will play out over time in the federal courts. The veto was expected, but it still struck a sour chord with many ag groups after the resolution won bipartisan support in both the House and Senate, along with a federal court injunction against the rule. National Cattlemen's Beef Association spokesperson Chase Adams says the litigation process will prove costly and long.
NCBA is very disappointed that the president chose to veto this over the will of Congress. Both chambers of Congress passed this WOTUS resolution by strong bipartisan majorities, and we're very disappointed that the president chose to ignore that and now forces us to continue on with very costly and very long delay litigation.
In a veto message, the president said that pollution from upstream sources ends up in rivers, lakes, and coastal waters near where most Americans live. National Cattlemen's Beef Association says WOTUS exceeds congressional intent and Supreme Court ruling to narrow the Clean Water Act.
The president fails to understand that these resources are regulated at the state level. They are also regulated. They are also taken care of by stewards of the land like farmers and ranchers. We rely on clean resources. We rely on clean water and the preservation of our natural resources. And what the president needs to understand is that this is nothing but a land grab by the EPA.
Neither chamber, the House or Senate, is thought to have enough votes to override the veto, making a new bill highly unlikely this year. Low prices and poor profit margins should keep expansion plans by most growers under wraps for 2016, according to Farm Futures' latest survey of planting intentions. Results of the survey were released this morning on the opening day of the 10th annual Farm Futures Business Summit, which is a Penton agriculture event. The two-day event is located in St. Louis and hosts hundreds of farmers from across the country. While Farm Futures found farmers ready to boost corn acreage this spring, the increase is modest at $89.5 million. That would be up 1.7% from 2015, which was reduced substantially by bad weather, but 1.1 million acres below levels achieved in 2014. Growers told Farm Futures they plan to cut back on soybeans, intending to plant 82.2 million acres, down around 500,000 acres from 2015. While flooding also set back soybean seedings in 2015, economics may keep growers from taking another crack at soybeans with that ground. Neither corn nor soybeans is showing a profit based on current 2016 crop prices, but corn has better potential to break even this year, says Bryce Knorr, Farm Futures senior grain market analyst. Farmers are beginning to recognize this, even though corn will require more cash flow in a tight year to plant due to higher production costs. The tight margin should keep farmers from boosting overall acreage much, says Knorr, who expects more land to go into forage crops or lay fallow unless markets improve. We'll be back with more after these messages. The Montgomery County Farm Bureau is hosting a pesticide review session on Friday afternoon. The session is scheduled from 1 p.m. to 2:30 and is taking place at the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro. Extension educator of environmental and energy stewardship, Gary Letterly, will conduct the review, and he has more information about what you can expect to learn if you attend.
What I do, and I take the exam too. I mean, I take it every 3 years, and so I've got a pretty good sense of how the questions are asked, and what makes sense to me is as a teacher and a test taker too, what makes sense to try to review on the parts and sections of the exam. That a lot of it is I would call it pretty common knowledge for producers who have been in the business for a while. Granted, there may be some folks out there that they're just not good test takers, and we have that too. But this will put you in a position to, I think, to do well and kind of hone in on areas that you maybe need to study a little more on. And we'll go through the practice section of the training guide, and we'll go through every page of it. And we do it at a pretty fast clip, and then we'll also come around to working on some training materials that I've abbreviated to get through them in a short period of time that will also kind of bring into focus what your areas of need are to know to successfully complete the exam. So, it's a pretty fast-paced training. This is not to displace, by any means, some of the more extensive training that's offered around the state at some of the clinics where farmers might come in and take the training in the morning and the exam in the afternoon. We used to do that across the state, but with reduction in staffing in areas of ag and natural resources, we've kind of been relegated to one or two or three or four locations across the state where the extensive training can take place. But I've been in the counties for quite a while now. I know what the stakeholders ask for, and they like the review session. So, again, working with the Area Farm Bureau to bring this to the stakeholders, those that are wanting the private applicator license, this is a good training for them.
Gary went on to explain who is required to have a pesticide license, how they are issued, and how often they have to be renewed.
These are authorized through the state of Illinois, through the Illinois Department of Agriculture. They are the licensing entity, and they basically handle the licensing procedure. The offering of the exam, construction of it, and the training materials are largely the responsibility of University of Illinois staff through the College of ACES there in Champaign-Urbana. And, again, field staff, like such as myself, offer the trainings. The people that need this, again, are those of you that plan to purchase and apply restricted-use products. And how things tend to go, this is not the crystal ball out being revealed, but tends to go is a lot of products, they have to come under a review from time to time. And if there is a reason to suspect they need a closer management detail, then they become a restricted use product. And that along with it comes additional responsibilities for people to really be to take, and having that responsibility, they need to demonstrate through their licensing that they have been trained in safe use and application of these pesticides. So even though what you might be using now may not be a restricted use product, it's very likely in the near future it could be. We've seen that happen with almost, and I say almost, all of the insecticides that are used. And then some of those that may have challenges with the amount of material that's maybe found in water supplies. So anything that's a metabolite of it or a residue of that pesticide that maybe it sticks around a little longer, these tend to be the ones that quickly fall under that category of restricted use. So, again, you may not be using a restricted use product right now, but if you are a farmer and you are applying pesticides to the land, probably be a good idea for at least one member of your operation to hold this license. And it comes around for renewal about every 3 years. And so that's kind of the timing and the sequence of that procedure.
Once again, the pesticide license review session is taking place tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. at the Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro. To sign up for the session, call 217-532-6171. That's all for your WSMI Farm Show. I'm Katie Bowles.